iTunes Celebrity Playlist Podcast.
Pearl Jam.
Hi, I'm Jeff Ament.
Hi, this is Stone Gossard, and you're listening to
our Celebrity Playlist Podcast on iTunes.
I consider them to be a shared list, but there's those that may argue that they're not actually shared. They're to run concurrently or in parallel, but I'm mixing them in my mind.
I think at this point we share some DNA, probably.
Yeah, so. I think it's just one list. It's for both of us.
And my first song is Simon and Garfunkel's Sound of Silence. It was the first song outside of church that I sang along with a song that wasn't a church song with my first grade class. And it was the first time that I sang along to something where I felt kind of the hairs stand up on the back of my neck. And funny enough, the teacher's name wasn't Mrs. Robinson, but it was Mrs. Robertson. I think for years I thought it was Mr. Robinson. I thought, man, that's just a really cool.
I love that song. I heard it on, I remember listening to it on the radio in, I don't know what year, it'd probably be 71 or 72 or whatever. I don't know what year it came out, but just driving around my parents' station wagon, they're just on AM radio, you know, just hearing that. And the whole family loving it, like knowing right away that it was like, everybody paid attention to it. It was so big.
People talking without speaking. People hearing without listening. People writing songs that voices never share. No one did disturb the sound of silence. Fools that I do not know.
Jeff emailed me Simon and Garfunkel, The Sound of Silence, and then I emailed him right back. I just said Gary Wright, because I was just trying to think of another song right around that time that I was like, that affected me. And I think it was a little bit later, but I remember my babysitter had an 8-track, and she came over and she played Gary Wright's record that has My Love is Alive and Dreamweaver on it. I thought I had heard something brand new with the dance beat that I was hearing. So that's what this one is called, My Love is Alive by Gary Wright.
Incredible key bass.
My heart is on fire.
My second choice is Proud Mary by Creedence. And you know, the first time that I actually heard that song, my mom had a copy of the Ike and Tina Turner version of it. I remember my mom dancing. I don't think I ever saw my mom dance after that, but she was dancing in front of the stereo, Proud Mary. And a couple years later, my uncle played me the Creedence version, and I immediately thought that they were ripping off Tina Turner. And was corrected by my uncle.
I love that song. Creedence Clearwater Revival. That's what Josh Taft and I used to listen to. His mom and dad played it. One of my oldest friends. So they played it a lot at their house. So I would go over there and have big dance parties and eat quesadillas and jump around in the living room with no furniture in it and dance to Creedence.
And those records sound so good, man.
And the playing on it and just the sensibility of all the different players and how they're just like, it's so rudimentary and then it just is so huge as well.
Job in the city, working for the man every night and day, and I never lost a minute of sleep, and worrying about the way things might have been. Be sweet, keep on burning, Proud Mary, keep on burning, rolling, rolling, rolling on a river.
Sex Pistols, I never really understood, which is insane. But it took me actually till I think sophomore year in high school where I finally heard them in the right situation that made me go, my jaw drop in terms of how incredible they were. I just never heard it. It was a little bit like I didn't really like Van Halen growing up until really I saw them play live later on. So, but anyway, at one point I heard the Sex Pistols and they tore my head off and I understood something about rock and punk rock. And the combination of those two things that I'm still loving today. And I know Jeff was into the Sex Pistols pretty early. But what turned me on about this song just recently was hearing it on KXP, which is the greatest radio station of all times. Their playlists are so fantastic. And they knew just the right one to play for me. And it was No Feelings.
I had that record on a cassette with Highway to Hell on the other side of the cassette.
And that's crazy.
Played the hell out of that thing in high school. And it was the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the same, like, have a couple of beers and just shake your head around and laugh.
The playing on that is so great on that particular track. It's the guitar tones and the drumming and the bass playing is a perfect amalgamation of, like, roots of hard rock and yet not obnoxious in any level. It was like raw, like really cranked up twin reverbs or something with like some like super the loudest amps of all. They're just like, it just sounds so loud and so incredible, but the playing, it's like so rooted and like, I don't know, it's the best.
Super aggro Chuck Berry.
Yeah, just, and the right chord changes, like the chords are all like pop chords and yet they're not gratuitous or I don't know. Anyway, perfect.
My next song is Black Sabbath by Black Sabbath. I had no idea what was in store for me when my cousin Tina bought that record. They were out visiting from Oregon. They're out in Montana. And she went down to Woolworths and came back with that Black Sabbath record, played it on my grandma's stereo. And I remember hearing the first, like the rain falling.
Yeah.
And I was looking at the cover and there's that witch on the cover. And then when that first chord came in, it just scared the get out of me. Like, I never, ever had heard music before like that in my life. And it scared me. And it's the same cousin that took me to go see The Exorcist when I was like 11 years old. Mm-hmm. And I had horrible nightmares for 3 years I couldn't tell anybody about because they were directly opposed to my Catholic upbringing.
My next song is going to be The Pretenders' Precious. I picked it. I just remember that song striking me. I think I was in ninth grade or something like that, or maybe 10th grade. And it was like kind of right when I was starting to really love music even more and start to really try to identify the kinds of music I really liked and buy records and stuff like that. And there's a lot of people that were into The Police and The Pretenders and stuff. And it took me a little bit of time before I really got it. But once I heard, I think it was this song, Precious by The Pretenders, that made me kind of, one, just think that was fantastic, the song, but also Chrissy Hynde and her personality and her female expression and her how she inhabited the sort of hard rock, punk rock, pop music, how she inhabited songs was just arresting. I thought she was magnificent. So
that's, and the guitar solo on that song, man, Honeyman Scott, the breakdown thing where there's a solo every, kind of a throwback sort of a way to do a solo, but where there's just a little, I think there's 8 different solos or something during that section, but he was such a cool player.
He split the 5th and Euclid Avenue. Was real precious. Hotel still ain't coming into view. How precious. It's a pity that you bruised my hip, cause I'm precious. You shouldn't let your manners slip. You're too precious.
My next song, in lieu of the beep, is Heaven Tonight by Cheap Trick. I had some friends that had earlier Cheap Trick records, but the first Cheap Trick record that I bought was Heaven Tonight, and I bought it on 8-track, and it was one of the 3 8 tracks that we listened to out at my skate ramp. So I just associate, as heavy as that song is, I actually associate that song with summer and having fun with my friends. And that song, just the way that those chords, the chord progressions in that song and stuff were hugely influential in the first songs that I ever wrote. That was what I gravitated towards, was those climbing minor scale.
Yeah, that song's got some heavy sort of classical sort of substructure underneath it. You know what I mean? Like, it just, you can feel like this massive, it's got a big harmonic thing going on. It's beautiful.
And I think when I was a kid, I thought that song was about dying, but it was actually about doing drugs, I think.
Yeah. All right, we're kind of jumping around here, but I'm jumping up to the mid-80s now with Frankie Goes to Hollywood, which it was just a period of time where I sort of got more turned on to dance music and more turned on by, I don't know, things outside of what I normally had listened to. People I was hanging out with that all had pretty eclectic tastes, and nobody could be tied down to one particular thing for too long. And so I think Frankie Goes to Hollywood, sort of appreciating that track and Trevor Horn's production is, you know, ridiculous, and I think it changed how records could be heard.
I don't think I appreciated any of that music until the last few years. Yeah. Like I was such a punk rocker at the time that kind of this people that went to Scoochies and stuff, yeah. I just had this crazy aversion to it and couldn't open my ears enough to even hear it.
Relax by Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
That's a pretty good segue into my next one, which is David Bowie Fame. Kind of similar to Cheap Trick. I had friends that were totally into Bowie before that, and it was mostly like girls in my school that were into Bowie, and I never really got it until I heard that song. And I remember being out at this little cafe and having breakfast, and somebody played that song on a jukebox. And I think it was right around the same time that I heard Beast of Burden by the Stones, crazy enough. Bowie continues to just reveal all sorts of incredible things to me every time I listen to his music. And I just read a book about the Berlin years, and he's one of my favorite artists of all time.
I just heard Nightclub, and on KEXP they played that.
God,
and it's one of the great, and that's got to be Bowie. He's got to be in on that, right?
He made that record.
All Berlin, right? Yeah, that's like, it's just such a haunting, beautiful, weird dance track. You know, it's like so good. I'm going to go with just a big, huge, it was a video that affected me. It was a song at a time that I just really liked, but it's George Michael, and the song's Father Figure. I just remember being struck by the lyric and the playing, and again, it's got some big chordal changes in there that are pretty beautiful. I think it's probably a hymn in some way as well. So, and I like hymns. Anyway, that's what this is. George Michael, Father Figure.
My next song is Motorhead No Class. I first heard Motorhead when I moved to Seattle and was hanging out with the guys in The Accused. And that was pretty much all they were listening to at that point. And my friend Chewy, who played bass in The Accused, God rest his soul, made me a tape of Motorhead songs. Had a huge, huge effect. I mean, that sort of actually kind of turned back into listening to heavy metal again. And I hadn't listened to heavy metal in probably 3 or 4 years up to that point. And, you know, I wasn't very soon after that I was listening to Dio and modern day Black Sabbath and stuff that maybe it wasn't quite as cool as Motorhead, but to this day it's some of the most energetic heavy rock music ever made.
Yeah, Motorhead is absolutely the sort of central band in terms of me thinking and feeling a music that didn't care whether it was punk or heavy metal. And it described that perfectly, because I remember just seeing kids with Motorhead shirts, and they were all kinds, you know, but they all loved that heavy, like, abandoned blues chord changes and up-tempo you know, bombast and incredible lyrics, incredible points of view, a whole state of mind that had a lot of energy in it.
Did you ever meet Lemmy?
Nope.
I met him once.
How was it? Good times?
Actually, I was dating a girl in Los Angeles, and she said, "Hey, I'm taking bass lessons tonight. Can you come pick me up at this house?" And I went to go to this little apartment in West Hollywood, and I rang the doorbell, and Lemmy answered the door. And I said, "Hey, I'm here to pick up so and so. Is she here?" And he's like, "Yeah, wait outside."
Kid.
So I waited outside. Finally, she came, but he was ice cold. I think he had a thing for this girl.
Yeah.
But I just remember being absolutely shocked. Like, open the door and Lemmy was there.
All right, I'm going to the Gap Band with "You Dropped a Bomb on Me."
Awesome song, man.
And I just like it because the blap, blap, blap. This the most rudimentary funk drums on it that you could ever possibly imagine. It's like they're so stripped down and they're so heavy, and they just describe a whole musical reality where craziest, stiffest, and simplest backbeat can create the funkiest track, and I love it. It's the drums are
space, man.
Yeah, incredible amount of space, incredible performances on it. There's the Gap Band.
Back to the other end of the spectrum with Black Flag, Gimme Gimme Gimme. God, there's a whole bunch of bands from that era that had a profound effect on me. I mean, Dead Kennedys, it could be any one of the Dead Kennedys songs or any of the Boston hardcore records. But for some reason, there's a handful of Black Flag songs, and this one being at the top of the list, it's a song that I sing all the time whenever I'm feeling a certain way. And I think it's usually when I catch myself being greedy, find myself singing that song. And there's two really different versions of that song. There's a version of Ed Henry Rollins sings that everybody knows, but I actually sort of prefer the Des Cadena one, which is the one that was recorded the year before that.
You know the world's got problems. I've got problems of my own. They ain't the kind that get me so when I had them bomb. Gimme, gimme, gimme! Gimme some more. You know I gotta go out, get something for my head. If I keep on doing
my next pick, I think is the most recent, and it's I attribute it to KEXP again, my favorite radio stations, because even the laziest of music buyers like me can always be listening to incredible music because that's what they play. Anyway, they played this song. It's a band called The Heavy, and it's a song called How You Like Me Now. Maybe it's a James Brown sample, or it's close to a James Brown sample as you can get without...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that initial thing is a sample.
Their take on James Brown is fantastic.
Real good.
And I actually should probably just pick a James Brown song, but this one's pretty damn good, too. The bass and drums in it are just slugging it out.
I think we need to hear a little bit of that.
The Heavies, How You Like Me Now.
How you
My next song is Jane's Addiction Mountain Song. The first time I think that I heard Jane's Addiction was, I think Stone and I went to see them play. It was sort of a showcase show.
Yeah, for nobody
them.
Was there.
And somebody from the industry took us to the show.
Perry was on the bar.
Yeah, and Perry was like in full. It was kind of a stripped down kind of Jane's Addiction show though, compared to what we saw after that. But he was on the bar and he was messing with his SPX 90 effects unit the whole time, and it was just a really incredible marriage of really groovy kind of African drumming and heavy metal guitar, and then Perry's deal, which was, you know, totally just Perry, like flamboyant. And in some ways it was sort of, I think it really had a big, it had a, at least from my end, it had a pretty big effect on what Mother Love Bone became. Mm. Like it let us know that it was okay to be lots of different things.
And I think, if I remember correctly, I think we probably walked out of that show going, that was cool, but not like jaws dropped. Like, but then I think maybe after we saw him play the next time.
At the Scream.
When we played with them, we opened up for him, and then we saw the majesty of their, like, they had been playing then for a year. And I think what we realized was the show that we saw was
Club Lingerie.
Club Lingerie. The show at Club Lingerie was like four A&R people. I think it was like a show that they were doing as a showcase, and there wasn't that many people there. I think it was sort of maybe they didn't even announce it or something. We got in on, you know, I don't know what it was, but we saw them in one setting and then saw them just
in front of
2,000 people, just everybody knowing every lyric and just ballads and epic heaviness and folk and Lou Reed and, you know, all of it combined, which was just incredible. So hats off to Jane's Addiction.
And we got to play that song with him at Austin City Limits, which was definitely top 10 highlights for me.
My next song, I was going to do Chaka Khan, I'm Every Woman, because I like it. But I've now changed my mind, and I'm going to go with Aaliyah, Try Again, which I think it might be the funkiest keyboards in the history of modern pop R&B. And I'm not sure who plays it, but it's a Timbaland production. It's one of the greatest keyboard performances of all times, and it's a great lyric. She's fantastic. It's sad that she's not still making records.
Try again, if I hesitate to let you in, know it to be yourself or play a role. Tell all the boys I'll keep it low. If I say no, would you turn away or play me off, or would you stay up? Don't succeed. Dust yourself off and try again. You can dust it off and try again and try again. Cause if at first you don't succeed, you can dust it off and try again.
My next song is a prog band that I really fell in love with in the late 80s, early 90s. My friend Quinn Dusenberry turned me on to this band, Marillion, a British prog rock band who obviously listened to a lot of Genesis, Lamb Lies Down on Broadway kind of era Genesis. And the thing, I mean, other than the music, which is incredible, but the thing that I really, really, really fell in love with was Phish's lyrics. Kind of the first prog music where I thought the lyrics were really heartfelt, really, really raw and honest. And the song that I picked is That Time of Night, which is from an album called Clutching at Straws, which is a record that it's usually when I'm by myself and I kind of know nobody else is around, but I'll just put that record on and crank it, and it just treats me right every single time.
At that time of the night, so if you ask me, how do I feel inside? I could honestly tell you we've been taking on a very long ride, and if my own has led me, have some free time someday with all good intention.
We got a couple picks left. Second to the last for me is Radiohead, and there's, you know, there's so many tracks you could pick in regards to that band. And I think my feeling is their impact has been so felt in terms of how far they've pushed themselves as a band and how far they've come from the beginning and how wide their sort of influence is and how intense their sort of harmonic blend is. It really has an effect on me. Every time I hear that band, I feel like I'm stoned, and I'm not. But this song in particular, and I think this came off Hail to the Thief. And again, that's even a record that was sort of post Kid A, right? It was like maybe right after Kid A. So it was sort of people weren't paying. Kid A was so big that
it was so controversial too, man. Kid A, yeah. Like, oh my God.
Everybody had an opinion. But anyway, I think it's kind of their take on Neil Young in some way. It's they're pretty simple on this song, and it's pretty straight ahead. And I appreciated that you can do that as well as anyone as well. And it's called Punch Up at a Wedding. And I think lyrically, always incredible. That particular line just is like a book. You can just think about that line for a second, and it says a lot, particularly an English wedding. That's what I'm thinking about, is a Punch Up at an English wedding, where a few pints have already gone down, probably. And I love Radiohead, and this is a Punch Up at a Wedding.
My last song is by a Tanzanian artist named Hukwe Zawose. He was a Tanzanian witch doctor. He passed away maybe three or four years ago. And I was lucky enough to see him play live a couple times, but he had these incredible hand-built giant kalimbas, and he had a special name for them, and I'm not sure what they were, but they were all hand-painted, and he just played the hell out of them. And his nephew sang with him, and they both had this sort of throat singing thing that they did, that they would kind of sing rhythmically and then they'd go into this throat singing mode, and it would just absolutely take you to another planet when you heard it or if you saw him do it live. And there was such incredible joy on his face when he was playing that it seemed to me that whatever he was doing was maybe one of the purest, greatest things that any human being could be doing. It seemed like he was reaching some really unique state only to him. This song, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, but Sizatizo La Amani Duniani, which is on Long Way Down.
Sizatizo La Amani Duniani Oko Hiroshima Iji ya Japani Miaka hamsini Hebado tunalia Jamani vita vibaya duniani, jamani msisikie, wala usiambiwe, vita vibaya duniani.
I guess we have one last song, then we have one bonus song each we're going to pick. Jeff Ament hasn't told me what his bonus song, which is great. He gets a bonus song, Jeff Ament. But my last song on our collective list is, I'm going with Bob Dylan. I don't really think I even began to understand Bob Dylan even a little bit until about 5 or 6 years ago. So I'm a new Dylan fan. But the more I hear and the more I get into him, the more I just think that he's got a unique opinion. But it's his love for the blues and his lyrics, his love for words and his love for tales and for allegory and metaphor and art. This one's called It's Not Dark Yet, But It's Getting There. And the reason why I picked it is because I think this is the first song that I actually was listening to where I remember bawling like a baby. And I don't think I had done that. And at the time, I don't think I'd done that for a long, long time. And I think there's something about the lyric and the particular mood I was in where it released something in me. And that it's I think it might be the saddest. It's like a Cormac McCarthy book all in one song or something like that in terms of the despair that's in there and the inevitable loss and death for that matter. But it's such a great hook. It's so incredible. And I think it's probably has something to do with Daniel Lanois too playing. I think there's a hook in there that Dan Lanois plays that is critical to making it even more than just Bob Dylan. And Bob Dylan by himself is, you know, an incredible force obviously. The hugest almost. He can always use a foil, and I think in that particular case, Lanois did a great, incredible job. If in fact he played on it, I'm not sure he actually did, but I think he did.
She put down in writing what was in her mind. I just don't see why I should even care. It's not dark yet, but it's getting there.
My last song, which is, I'm going to, it's a band called Midlake, and a song is called Acts of Man. I first heard them maybe a year ago or a year and a half ago on KXP again. I heard this song called Roscoe. So went home, immediately downloaded the song, and so it pops up every once in a while on my iPod. But that song Roscoe is almost kind of a Fleetwood Mac kind of a song. Like, it's a really incredible pop song. And this new record, Courage of Others, is way more of like a 60s folk record or something. It's super heavy. And it kind of reminds me of Pentangle or something kind of from that era. But the lyrics are really super incredible. And they did a really good job at creating a certain kind of a vibe in this new record. And it's totally different than their last record. And I can't wait to see them live. Midlake.
Of lords that have long since passed. It's in their hands. It's in their hands. Been in their blood for many years. It brings them sorrow. In a dark room, he trembles alone.
If I have a bonus pick, I'm actually going to go back in time and hit a little more heavy metal, because I'm a little light on the heavy metal. But this band was sort of the apex of heavy metal. I think I pretty much stopped listening to heavy metal after I was so worn out by Merciful Fate. But they sort of epitomize the sort of apex of both Satan worshiping and complex guitar, bass arrangements, always with an incredible groove going through them all, like the tightest funk band. And it's very strange singer who only sang up either in the highest of octaves or the lowest, and might have been really the key to the Cookie Monster singers of today. Yeah. I think he was really he was the gateway drug for the Cookie Monster singers, because he had two weapons. He was like, whoop-a! And down low.
I didn't think it was real. When my friend Perry played me that music, I was
it's weird.
They're playing weird. That through something.
If you haven't heard it before, it sounds a little dated probably too, but anyway. This song is called Desecration of Souls. It's Merciful Fate, and it's on an album called Don't Break the Oath. And I remember at the time I was going out and drinking lots of beer with my friend Regan Hagar, and we'd come back from the clubs and stay up late listening to music. I think we listened to this record for a whole year. We'd always come back to it. I guess Jeff had a shout-out to Satan on his list with Black Sabbath, and I felt like I needed to have a shout-out to Satan as well. And that was a delight, Jeff Amon. I can't tell you how happy I was to be in a collaborative event like this with you. And thanks, Tim Bierman, for encouraging us.
Yeah, the ping-ponging thing was really fun.
Yeah.
It was a fun 24 hours to actually just go back and forth and tell each other what songs we really liked and had a big, profound effect on us.
It did. It really was almost the most fun we've had together. It's like,
it was good. It's sort of like reliving our entire time together.
I loved it.
It's good.
So anyway, that was fun.
iTunes Celebrity Playlist Podcast.